Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer. Hey guys, welcome to this episode of Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino, and I have with me today everybody's favorite personality who wears a Street Cop instructor polo, but no shoes. None other than the gun game extraordinaire, legend himself, Tommy Brooks, a.k.a. Brooksy.
Yep.
I know you hate the intros. That's why I really fluff them up, dude. Like, yeah, it makes you so uncomfortable.
Funny though, you bring up that the polo and the no shoes. Because can I be honest with you? You know what kills me? The polo.
You hate it, huh?
Well, no, I didn't hate the polo. I just from a thing like, I don't know if it's my class or personality or what, but what's funny is I'm a hoodie guy, like all year round. Like even when it starts to get warm, I'm still wearing a hoodie, but like with basketball shorts, I kind of keep it balanced. So it's funny that while I was doing the presentation in Atlantic City and you were like, hey, listen, you know, we get there's uniforms, let's get polos. I was like, oh, these things, you know, they're great. And they were very, very nice. It just felt odd to not be wearing a hoodie or a t-shirt. It just felt odd. It was just out of, it was like out of my uniforms. Like you're a baseball player, you played every game in the same uniform. One day someone said, all right, no cotton this time. It's all going to be, well, no polyester. It's all something else. You know?
So why don't you just wear a hoodie?
Yeah, no, I was already, it's funny, it was on my list of things. I was going to mention that to you this year and be like, hey, if it's all right, I wear a hoodie, I will. I'll put on the stuff. But yeah, and I definitely love the hoodie. But the no shoes thing, yeah, big, definitely big.
Hoodie it is.
Yeah, I'll be all about it. How's everything going over there, brother? You crazy.
I'm good, dude. How's that boat of yours treating you?
Yeah, and everything's good, man. It's good to catch up. Last time we spoke, it's funny that prior to going on to like the podcast with you, I try to think of a couple things like, hey, this would be a good thing to think of. And then it just leaves my brain. Something else comes in. And some things I said, oh, I'm going to take some notes. So I started taking a couple notes of things to talk about. And without even a joke, I never mentioned a single thing from my notes last time we did it. We just started talking. And next thing you know, we're like, all right, it's been an hour, dude. It's like, I had ideas, never got to them. But so I guess today kind of wanted to snipe in on a couple things that I think I did feel like I always want to repeat. So I either said them and I'd like to repeat them or I didn't get to them. But one of them, which is, I think, kind of big, was I want to talk a little bit about what the gun game presentation is when it comes to how officers take it and in their mind, employ it. And what I mean by that is I've been doing training here in New England for a long time. You and I know that we've talked about that. And so what happens is I get subpoenaed into court a lot. I should say I get asked a lot. I get you know, court references and, hi, we want to know about your training and all this stuff. And a lot of defense counsel as well. And I understand why they're asking, but I think that they don't understand that I don't have what they want. I think they're under the impression that, and when I say we, you know, when I do the presentation for the gun game, that we have some sort of locked-in program, science-based program. You come, you listen, you are now robot trained. You have a special secret superpower you did not have prior to this morning. Please accept that superpower. Court will now be easier for you. Because what happens is cops take the presentation and then they mention the report, you know, based on my training at this thing or based on my attendance at this presentation, I knew he had a gun. So I took him out of the car and then he had a gun. And so then defense, rightfully so, is like, tell us about the magic you taught. And so what I think a lot of people don't understand is how much we drive home the point that if you can't physically put eyes on a gun, you don't know there's a gun there. There's no presentation in the world that could ever have you say, I knew there was a gun there. You could know there's deception. You could know there's all these things. And that's one thing about the gun game is we create an entire environment of all these scenarios. But like I know I did say at the last presentation, it's the same indications, though, that would apply to other things. We're just talking about things as they apply to guns. So when you're in an environment or you're in a scenario and you have reason to think there's an unlawful firearm, by unlawful firearm, I mean a person who misuses the normally legal right to carry, that all these indicators and these things have been patterns in the past, but they're stories, they're opinions, you know? And I really want to drive home the point that people who leave the gun game reach out to me a lot with a lot of thank yous. And I post them, they say, hey, the stuff works. You know, you said it would look like this. I had a scenario the other day and it looked just like what you said. And because of that, I picked up on it. And I love that. And I hope that everyone who comes with the hundreds who have said that before, if not getting into the thousands now, and I've been doing this for a long time, I think it's great. And I want that. But they also have to know that these are their observations. Like, you can't rely on the presentation to validate your PC. So I guess where I'm going with this is, I'm going to give you a bunch of tools of patterns that I have had other officers tell me I have seen in real life. I've been able to employ and put it all together in a package. So when you leave there, you say, all right, I am in a mindset that if certain behaviors come about like this, 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 and that, it could mean this and that. And then employ it. But that doesn't mean that when every stone you flip isn't going to be, I've used the example before, but you know, it was a graffiti can in the backpack. It wasn't a gun. It was just a knife. And this guy's confused and didn't know if he could have a knife this long, you know, down his side of his pants. So there'll be something. I mean, generally the behaviors, the indicators, they all lead to something, but it's not even always illegal. Some guy's just private, you know, like guy's had a fight with his wife. He's just acting squirrely. Thinks he's going to lock him up. So his whole, everything's a little bit off. So, you know, so the things he says during the car stop sound very guilty and all that. So I just really want to kind of highlight that. It's just people really love the gun game and people really hit me up a lot. And I say a lot, like if I do a presentation with 50 people in it, I'll have 10 reach out within 24 hours. I'll have 20 reach out to me over the course of a couple of months, all with just overwhelming commentary on appreciation of it. But I really do have to hit that point. When people come, I hit the point in the presentation. I hit it a lot, actually. But I tell them, the PC is yours to get. The reasonable suspicion is yours to get. If you see something, you have to have it make sense to you. You know,
I think that's very well said. You know, it's funny. I was teaching last Monday, and I was thinking about some of the things that you say in that regard. And you know, I think you do a better job of really driving home just a little more clarity of what this stuff actually means. We talked about it last time. The felony stretches, the felony yawns. Yeah. The subconscious telegraph, the body language, the behaviors, the nervous indicators. I mean, there is obviously some scientific data behind what nervous body language looks like. And for the most part, as long as you're not a sociopath or a psychopath, you're probably going to exhibit the same factors that every other human being exhibits. And have you ever remember a time in your career where you've come across somebody who's a psychopath or a sociopath where they were having no reactions?
I'm going to say no. Because, you know, you're asking if someone's maybe a sociopath. So I'm certain, like, there's some homicide investigators and stuff that probably have great references of that to that point. So I'm going to say no. But yes, I have absolutely, we've joked, we just said just stone-faced dudes. Like, we've had guys where, like, and when I say we, I'm really throwing that term broad. But, like, I'll give you one specific example. There's some guys that I work with, and they had an informant, you know, give them a tip-off, guy with a gun, they get down there. Kid had a history of bad firearm behavior, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, they see him and he was actually so cool. They questioned whether it was worth kind of pulling it off here. They're thinking, hey, listen, if we try to frisk this dude now and he's got nothing on him, you know, then we're not going to be able to grab him later. He's going to go take the gun inside or something else. We'll miss our window or something. So what's funny is he was so cool that they just didn't want to deal with it. And then looking at the point, they were like, you know what, let's just, the foreman says he's got it, let's just do it. And then what we have, and literally to the point of like, you know, sir, just show me your hands. And his whole demeanor, what's funny is I remember at the time I'd actually seen the body cam of it. It was just fascinating. The kid could not have been cooler. Like when I say could not have been cooler, he didn't blink when they came up. He had no, nothing. And so, I mean, there's some people who are just good at this. But we've also had kind of a running joke, and we say that illegal firearm possessors, they have a, like anybody, a progress scale. And they graduate to different things. And when they're young, their first instinct is just run. You know, they never had a gun case before. So they see the cop, run. They're so easy on the indicators, it's embarrassing and stupid for them, actually. In fact, you could run a whole class, if you just watch juveniles with guns reacting to the police, you could run the greatest training in history. Problem is because they're juveniles, obviously those aren't the ones you know you can show. But with that, it's funny that when they get older, they do get a little bit cooler because, you know, they caught a gun case. Maybe they beat it because I don't know, the cop did something and they wanted motion. So now the kid thinks, oh, I know the law. They can't do this. And they'll be cool as hell with that. I'll give you a real specific story on that. There was a guy who, it wasn't my arrest. I was assisting another unit. But when I got on scene, the kid just kept saying, I was in my driveway. I was in my driveway. Y'all lights in my driveway. And then the cops, it was already taking him out of the car. And they're like, yeah, I got that. He's like, no, but just admit it. Say it right now. Are you recording body cam? The cop's like, yeah, yeah. What's going on? He goes, just say I was in my driveway and then your blue lights went on. You pulled me over after I was in the driveway. The cop goes, yeah, 100%. So he goes through it. There's a gun, 30-round mag on the passenger seat and all this. And they grab him. And the kid was cool as hell. Cool as hell. He once he got that statement, everything was fine. The gun was never got any better hidden. It was right there sticking out. And the kid couldn't have handled it better. And we were joking about that later. We're like, you'd think he'd have said stuff like, get off my property. Or, I don't know, anything. It just, you can't look in my car. He didn't care. And we actually were back at the station. He's writing the report. Someone's like, oh, who'd you grab? And so he says the name of the kid. And we all know him. He's, a gun-toting dude. And one of the guys goes, oh, I had his last gun. So, oh, yeah, really? And it was a motion where he had pulled into a friend's driveway. And I'm not going to get into the legal background of it. But essentially, just from Massachusetts law standpoint, it had to do with the inventory required a public way. And once it was on the private property, there was no reason to argue it. And he had searched the car because he was towing it because he found a gun during a frisk. But then he wrote it up as an inventory. Anyway, long story short, the kid had beat that motion. So now he's just thinking in life, like if you're on your driveway, they can't search the car. Like he just took the small nugget away of fact there. And all he needed was a cop to say was, you know, I was in my driveway and then your lights went on. Say it. Cop's like, yeah, I'll agree with that. What are you talking about? But in hindsight, we kind of pieced that together by the end of the night. So those are the little ones there where it's like, you see people's reactions are different because you don't know that about them. You don't know he beat that last case. So this makes him nervous, but this doesn't, you know? And maybe that's a terrible example of that. But nonetheless, until you kind of know it. But just, there is no presentation that I have ever been aware of, let alone taken, and certainly let alone ever presented, where I could say, if you see this, there will be a gun here. It's just, I don't think it exists. And unless you see a gun, if someone says there's a gun there. I think that what happens though is when there is a gun though, there are a series of really, really telltale moments, you know? So the telltale heart, remember that Edgar Allan Poe book? Remember the heart was beating and the guy just, he knew that the body was under the floorboard. He could almost hear it. Like just because his nervousness of knowing it was there, his own heart, he thought he heard it. And it's like, it's kind of what happens. Like if I'm a kid and there's a gun in that glove box, the cop says, how you doing? It's hi. What am I thinking in my head? He knows about the gun. He's going to know about the gun. And the longer the conversation goes, it's just a telltale heart here in my glove box. And funny that the giveaways that come, like, you know, and sometimes you create them yourself. Like, and I say this to other guys, like how many times you pulled over a car and you say, you know, hey, how you doing? License registration. And he's like, I don't have the registration. You say, okay. It's usually in the glove box. You don't have it. It's not in there. Okay. Registration is not in the glove box. All right. Well, listen, I'll tell you what, it's actually a ticket to not have your registration on there. But I find that sometimes people just don't look for it very well. I'll make a deal with you right now. Let's double check, make sure that there's not a registration in the glove box. And I'll make a promise to you that I, even if it's not, just because you made the effort of looking for it, I will show my discretion and not write you that ticket. If you said something to a guy and he goes, no, it's definitely not in there. You know, he just doesn't want to open this thing in front of you, you know? And there's a guy, there's a kid I work with, a great cop. But he'd even pointed one out to me once. It's very obvious, you know, now that I say it, but he'd even said to me once, he was like, yeah, he goes, because he and I have talked about that registration thing. It comes up a lot. A lot of guns in registration, a lot of guns in glove boxes that are just basically known simply because the kid just was convinced he had no registration, did not want to look a second time. But anyway, he'd point out to me, he goes, yeah, the simplicity of the fanny packs. He was saying, like, the guy goes, I've got a fanny pack strapped across his chest and sitting in the passenger seat. Say, hey, man, how are you? Hey, great. You don't have a seatbelt on, you know, do you have an ID or something on you? He says, I don't have my ID with me. We're saying, like, that's just, what a weird flag that is, we think of it. It's like you walked out with a man purse attached to your chest to carry your personal items, and the ID didn't make the travel list. You know, your wallet didn't make the travel list. Like, and of course, they're not going to keep their wallet in the same thing you keep a gun. So it's not like, well, he has the ID and the gun. So if it's run and throw that thing, they don't want the ID attached. So again, equally funny. Guy's got a fanny pack across his chest. Didn't bring an ID out. Now again, the gun game is just machine gun fire, 1,000 references like that, right? But it's funny that, like I said, like a guy can't say later in a court presentation, based on my training at the gun game, I knew there was a gun on him. Do you know what I'm saying? It's just a great tip. It's a great story. If you see it and it applies to you and you can legally apply something, know the story, and then you explain it in common sense. You let a defense counsel, judges, prosecutors, juries know that it was weird that a guy didn't have an ID, but he wore a fanny pack. And then you tie in that there's a trend of fanny pack guns being carried. In fact, again, our guys are great. Where I work, our guys hop right onto the intelligence stuff, and they'll actually bring up recent reports of how many fanny packs. We have a thing called the Intelligence Center that comes right out of the area here, and it'll actually put out, like, here's a list of all the fanny pack guns in the last 30 days. Like, guys who are on their game for gun getting around here, yeah, they'll save that email. Oh, I might need that this week. You know what I mean? And they'll reference that stuff right up. And again, it's really what the gun game is about, professionalizing. But I can't stress enough, it changes so often that when defense counsel asks me for something, they're always like, hey, in the Commonwealth versus this case, we want these materials. So great, when was the arrest? You know, 2020, like 2019, 2018, 2017. I say, if you think I'm still telling the same stories I was telling in 2020, 2019, or 2018, you don't realize how dynamic this presentation is. You don't realize how fast I move. You don't realize how often I come up with new ideas. I have 50 pounds of crap to squeeze into a 1 pound bag. When I come out with the gun game, I just choose what I think is the most relevant today, the most interesting, and then sometimes the funniest. And that's it. So if you think I even know what I said, you know, in 2020, I don't. If he says, oh, he told me this, I'll concede that I told him that. I also told him it doesn't mean anything if it didn't apply in your scenario. But like I said, I do want to kind of say that out loud, because like I said, I do hop on that, but often it's too late. Often it's because some cop's in a bad position because he wrote himself as if he's been, you know, I don't know, God, like blessed by the Pope or some shit. You know what I mean? Like, I knew there was a gun because I went to this presentation. And they go, lead defense counsel to me. Defense like, yeah, show me what you got. And I'm like, I'll tell you what I got. You got an old man with a couple of jokes. Tell great stories. I'm like an uncle who gave you advice at Thanksgiving dinner. And now you want that to be court ready. Like, people love my presentation because it's on point. It's funny. It's witty. I'm a great presenter. I tell you, I don't like all the fanfare about being a great cop, but I absolutely accept the fanfare. I'm a great presenter.
And yeah, listen, there's no arguing that, because
yeah,
I have yet to this day,
great.
Yeah, found one person. You know, people said, well, I've been to, oh, I know you guys are. I've been to the gun game. I'm like, how was it? Like, fucking amazing, dude. That guy's the best. Thanks. Which is great.
You know what's funny? You guys have the little data stats on the classes, so I can go on like the reviews and I can look up like the the right word. Data is all I got.
Survey Monkey.
Yeah, Survey Monkey's there. So all the data points there. It's kind of cool, man. It's really cool that you do that. Because I tell you right now, dude, if I ever have a bad day and I think, you know, I need something to boost me up, dude, I tell you, I can hop on my Survey Monkey. Because I tell you, nothing's ever made me feel better. I couldn't even believe it. Like, and you're not talking like, you know, there's one class with 30 people took it. I mean, it's in the hundreds and hundreds, especially for me now, you know, and it's just awesome, dude. To look at it and look like, you know, 99%, you know, with, you know, this said, you know, it was the best it could possibly be. You know what I mean? And then the 1% deferred, didn't answer the question. It's like, okay, this isn't even on the way to average yet. This is exceptional. And one dude doesn't answer questions. So yeah, like I said, I like it a lot. I like it a lot. And I want to keep it going. And my fear of how it's going to end badly for me one day is that I have to pay an attorney every time my local ones here come up. I got to pay an attorney to combat all this. You know, I keep it running around the courts and explaining that something doesn't exist, and it's expensive. So my fear is that one day the attorney bills will get bigger than the income. And as much as I love presenting, I can't do it for a net zero. So that's my, I've decided to go a different angle. It's not just really telling people, saying on a goddamn podcast, I don't save materials. If you had a great presentation, I made it for you. No one will ever see it again. I cater cut each one. If I have back-to-back classes, you will have the exact same class, 100%. 100%. You will have the same class. If I have you within 2 weeks, you'll probably have pretty close to the same class. But you and I talked about this last time. During that first one, I will spend all the time taking little notes to myself and new ideas and new stuff. And yeah, if I got two nights in a hotel until I have to be in the next town. Bet your ass I'm on the computer, 4 hours at the airport, 3 hours at the hotel, 2 hours that morning. I'll be doing that stuff, and I will cut this, and I'll move this in and that, and the other stuff's gone. It's gone.
Let me go back for a second.
Yeah.
And we talked about sometimes these guys or girls, whoever it may be, and I'm going to ask you about girls too. I just triggered that for me. But yep. These people are acting so cool. They're so relaxed. You kind of talked about it a little bit. Why else do you think somebody's just so calm with the police when they're involved?
They've done it before. They've been caught. They know that the running gives them up. They've had some practices. The older the dudes are, the better the poker face every time. When you talk about things like, say, trending, for example, things that trend, right? Take like shoestrings. Here's the thing that I've done. I've referenced a few times this year. So the trend of carrying a gun on a shoestring around your neck. Now, some people will just put it out there and say, hey, officer safety, they carry guns on shoestrings. And I feel like a low-level instructor would put that out. You know, here's a picture of a shoestring. They carry guns on shoestrings. Look at me, deep intel. I feel like a higher-level instructor points out more than that. And so, like, one of the things, like, I've done is I talk about, take something like that and break it down at different levels. Like, one of the levels we'll talk about is knowing who someone is in a gang. So I play, when I did that thing, I played a Snapchat video of a kid who's an important figure in his particular gang walking around with a gun on a shoestring just in his kitchen, just kind of talking to the camera. And I play it on mute because what he's saying doesn't matter. And then I talk about the hierarchy within, and this is a gang example here, but take any group. There's a hierarchy in every group. And so everybody wants to be like the one who's up here. And so take, for example, you. The head of the group here. I'm below you. Below me is Joe, Jeff, and Larry, who we just hired in the last 3 months. And below them are two interns. If you walked around, and this is very metaphoric now, but we were a gang, and you just walked around with a gun hanging around a shoestring on your neck, there's a tendency for us to think that's how the cool guys do it. The guys who have made it, the ones we look up to, the ones that I'm aspiring to be. I'm joining this gang to be like him. Like that's the goal, is to have his credibility, his reputation. So yeah, I'm going to carry one like that. But then I say you can take it to another level. So that takes it up a level. First level is be careful. They carry guns on strings. Next level is thinking about how it affects the people within the group. But then the next level is to go here with it. Knowing that human behavior, people lie. People make up stories for their own ego. They make up stories to become legends, right? To made up and false, but legends nonetheless. And so now tell me, and I mean, you specifically, Dennis, tell me if you can imagine this lie being told. And picture a gang element, right? In a city gang element. Can you picture a couple dudes sitting down and looking at a Snapchat and seeing one of the senior, the hierarchy dudes wearing a shoestring around his neck? Tell me that when they get a gun, they don't take time to go grab a shoestring and try it on, to then realize, hey, if you put it on the trigger guard, it hangs upside down and actually aims at my face. How does he do this? How does he get this thing to stay down? You know, and all of a sudden they go, oh, you get a tighter on the handle. Okay, got it. And they have to practice tying it. And I, as an instructor, will take a gun, you know, and I've done it. I take a shoestring. I go, yeah, this is the only way it really works. Otherwise, it's aiming at your face while you're wearing it. But then think of the next level of this, where knowing the humans lie, that one kid will go out with that, and he'll go out and he'll have the gun underneath his shirt, and he'll go out that day. And he'll come back and his friends will be like, you know, hey, what's up? He wants to be like that senior dude. So he'll tell his younger friends, yeah, I was out, man. I had the gun on me, man. I wore it right here. And the cops posted me and they didn't even find it. They searched me and everything, but they never fell here. They frisked me and all that and let me go. Completely made up story. Complete fabricated lie. Never happened. But he makes it up for his own hero points about how he survived a police encounter. And then those kids go, holy shit. I'm now adding credibility to this. This shoestring thing is not only cool, he's doing it. We now have verified story about why you can evade law enforcement with it. And then God forbid some kid actually goes out there and some cop first really doesn't find it, you know? So it's funny how you'll see that, like, we talk about things like with the gang side of gun stuff, we talk about trends. And where I'm going with this little longer than I planned example is that if you have a gang called the...
Let's call it the Sharks.
The Sharks and the Jet. When you're a Jet, you're a Jet. Yeah, I do show tunes. If you're a member of the Sharks, right, and you've got, let's say, 40 gangs in your area where you work, and a kid from the Sharks gets caught with a shoestring a gun on a shoestring around his neck. That's not just an officer safety bolo. The people paying attention, the shocks are all more shocks than other people will be carrying that like that. You know what I mean? If you see, if you stop a car and there's a gun in a certain hiding spot, he had it behind the radio. Great. That gang is on a radio trend. You know, you'll see when you stop that gang, highlight radios, you know, whatever. And some elevate, some are air filters under the hood, which, you know, there's a different legal aspect you can get to. And some are in their waistbands. Chapter one, you know what I mean? So, but like I said, but so we talk a lot about that stuff too. And I, ironically, the version I do of what I just did with you is actually shorter when I do a gang game presentation. It just took me to explain it now. Because I don't have all the other referential points of a previous day of you and I doing a presentation together. But the moral of the story is like, that's even a section there too. It's just trends, just reading trends. So do I know that a kid's going to have a gun there because his buddies did? Absolutely not. But if you saw that in the last week and a half, three dudes from the same gang had a gun there, and then you see some guy in a neighborhood where he's got problems, and he shouldn't be there, and he's hoodied up, and it's 85 degrees out. You're going, this is a strange time to have a hoodie up over your head, and this dude has problems right here. This is a problem maybe waiting to happen. This is a good time to just say hello, you know? And all of a sudden, like I said, you find yourself in these scenarios. And again, to make it real easy, and you go, oh, look, Andy has a warrant. I can just go arrest him. But my point is just, I just want people having awareness, just, you know, be aware of that pattern or that trend or whatever it is, because they really exist. And when you really go by through the reports, you suddenly go, wow, yes, go rural. Every rural has some family of douchebags. I mean, I'm sure of it. You know, I mean, we're in small town USA. Yeah, we don't have gangs. We don't have shootings. In fact, everyone here carries firearms. We literally walk around with guns on our hips here. Great. You have a family of giant douchebags somewhere on there. Whatever the problem is in your district, swap gun for anything else. They will trend within themselves. If something worked for one of them, the rest of them will do it. It's just it's how everything works. It's how life works.
How do women fit into the gun game? Just an off-the-cuff question there.
Yeah, I would say with absolute perfection. I mean, it's nothing changes. It's the exact same thing. I can answer your question with actually another point that I actually wish I'd thought of before. So the gun game is actually a very hands-off thing. So we don't get into contact. Like that's why even at the end of that little example I just gave, I then went on to be like, for example, if you had a guy with a warrant, we didn't even go that far in the presentation. I talk about what to look for. You go look for it. I never get into contact or safety or any of that stuff. So what's good is a lot of my scenarios are actually very hands-off. They're more how to think, how to put yourself in a positioning until the law brings something to you, until you find yourself. The example I use in the presentation is a poker game. You know, you need good cards and a good read. I want to present the read to you so that you know how to read a room. You know how to write a really detailed report about observations. You have previously already thought out good verbiage to explain a common sense thing. So when it happens, you're not just going, duh, seem nervous. You've got these really good things, right? So that's what I want to give. But it doesn't stand alone. If it was a tower, nothing would be there. So the key is you, a lot of my presentations, it's a kind of a walkaway. And then when you have good cards, mine's the read, here's the good cards. When those good cards come in, like in poker, and you combine that with a good read, okay, well, maybe now you make the decision that you want to play a hand. You know what I mean? And we talk a lot about that. So what's funny is my catchphrase is to walk away. It's actually my catchphrase. I'll basically say, you've got this, and that. What do you think? And people are like, oh, this, that, that. I'm like, what are you doing? Walk away. And they're like, for real? I said, I would still not be there. Guys have been texting me and be like, hey, love the class, blah, blah. For the record, you walk away a lot of shit. They're great. But the one I stayed on, though, is going to be stronger than yours, right? So walk the fuck away. My T-shirts for the gang school here say, do not arrest this man, which I've recently updated a do not arrest this one. Because to your point, when a lot of girls go, I want to buy a hoodie and you don't have one for girls. I'm like, sorry about that. So to bring me back to what you said with the girls is one thing I like about my presentation a lot is that other than the section on foot chases, because I always kind of discuss, there's a lot of science behind foot chases and observations and things to say on the radio and after effect and seeking and researching and questions afterwards. Other than foot chases, there is not one thing in my presentation that requires you to look or be present like what you'd imagine as like a cop you wouldn't want to mess with. It's really my It's equally applicable to a 110-pound or a 510-pound person. It's very thinking. It's very observational. It's very trend discussing. It's that when you find yourself in a scenario and you say, I think I'm going to make this kind of a case here. When you read the room, you suddenly go, holy shit, that, and that, those really happened. You know what? I now know I should also do this. Okay, that opened up a whole new thing here. Like in some ways in the presentation, it's really specific, like the gun game. It's literally the hot and cold game. It's literally a part where I literally talk about being in a room and just reading the room and knowing where the gun is just by people's body behavior. I get some great, you know, examples of that, which is also funny, by the way. Defense counsel will say, I want your materials in the hot and cold game. This guy talked all about it. It's great. My presentation on that was literally a meme of shifting cups with a ball under it while I talked. So yeah, there's no size. So yeah, females, males, tall, short, skinny, fat. It's not one that is affected by that. It's just not. Foot chases, yes. If you are 580 pounds, you will get less from my foot chase section. But you can still do the interview part. You still do the interview part, but you will likely miss a lot of the observations while running.
Do you drink coffee?
It has no effect.
Yeah, it's constant high energy because like you're never off, dude.
Yeah. Hey, I'll tell you what. Here's a good one for you. So I had a great text thread with Kenny. Now, he might have done a podcast with you already. I think this is good for a podcast example here because it speaks to a street cop. It speaks to truly committed presenters, right? Who, even if I'm always on, people are always on when it comes to thinking of their presentations. So Kenny and I have talked before about, you know, things that people say when they have guilty conscience, right? And we've done it before. I actually have a section currently. They'll probably be gone in 6 months. But like currently, I'm doing a thing called Deaf, Dumb, and Blind. Where, because I just try to shake up the design of it. I play just different videos of people who, when frankly asked directly, are there any weapons in the car? They either go deaf, dumb, or blind. The guys would literally say, like, no, right there in the ashtray. And they're going, and you go, no, the ashtray. And they're going, what? What are you talking about? When the answer is very obvious, you pointed at an ashtray. They clearly don't want to open the ashtray. Where I'm going with this is, so Kenny and I will sometimes talk about things and how similar our classes are, not similar as each other. Similar as in the design of our mission, you know, we both believe that people give themselves away. He sits down, he interviews people, and he decides based on their messed up answers that there's something more here, and it develops from there. Mine is very similar. It's just different problems. I don't ask the kinds of questions that Kenny asks. Like, I don't say things like, how long are you going to be in town for? When did you start driving? Like, those don't apply to an inner city environment, right? So it's just interesting how it's the same concept, but totally different class. So he sent me a text recently, but basically he was saying that he realized that looking back at a lot of them is the past tense. People who speak in past tense when it came to their plan to go somewhere. Now, I already do a past tense thing. I have a couple of things in my thing where past tense is a flag for certain things that happen in your brain. But this was a new angle because he was just saying, he goes, it's funny. He goes, when you say to someone like, hey, what's going on? You are currently in the state of Indiana. Your car is coming from New York. Where are you headed? I was going to go to out to California for a couple of days, but the past tense, like, and he was saying that it's a funny thing. He goes, yeah, I said, dude, if you watch your videos, you'll see it in every one, I bet. Because it makes sense. Because you think of how the human mind goes. In his brain is going, I'm fucked and I'm going to jail. I'm not going to make it to California. So in the moment, he said, where are you going? They're already thinking like, I was going to go to California. There's also a part of them almost thinking in their head, like, I'm doing a bad thing. Like in the Kenny world, you know, they got a load of shit in the car. You know, that in the Kenny world, like, they're doing a bad thing. There's a cop asking them where they're going. So they find themselves like their behavior, like they're almost apologizing for like, oh, I was going to go to California, but I don't know. I haven't decided yet. Like that's really the full sentence in their brain. Like, in fact, it's funny you asked me this, officer. I think I'll turn around right now. In fact, after some thought, why am I going to California? I'm heading back to New York where I'm safe. People don't ask me to go to California. But it's just funny. So like it got he and I texting each other back and forth where I started thinking of other ones. So and again, I wish you could read it because we had a couple gold mines. And I joked him, I go, buddy, I go, this is going right in the presentation. I go, you take this one. I go, this was your idea. But it spun me onto another one that I thought of. And I was like, I'll take this one. But yeah, it's just funny how like just even just as instructors, just shooting the shit, making a funny joke. But then, you know, what's funny is like he goes through his videos and, you know, there it's going to be, you know. What are you doing? I'm heading to California. How am I going to be there? I'm planning to visit my sister for whatever. These are normal sentences, you know, versus, you know, hey, you know, where you headed? I was going to head out to California for a couple of days. Change your mind? Yeah. Got pulled over. What changed your mind? Being pulled over by a cop. Okay, well, that's an interesting, it's an interesting thing to make you change your mind about going to California. What would the presence of a cop make you not want to go to California for? Like, what things could add up to this, you know? So that's and again, that's very gun game shit. And it's very, you know, so in talking to Kenny about that kinds of stuff, he's like, I got one of those things. Yeah, I got one. And he's balls on with it. He balls on with it. Kenny's gonna be pissed when he hears I said that. He's like, yeah, it's my story. I was gonna tell that in the podcast. And I want to do all my podcasts with him. I'll still get to talk, but I'll get Kenny's viewers. Yeah, so whenever he's in the podcast, I'm like, oh, sweet, someone will hear me and somebody might sign up for the gun game.
It's very funny. When we're out here, and anytime he comes out, he usually comes out in June, and we'll patronize New Jersey and go around to different establishments. And, you know, typically it's not uncommon for me to get recognized, being that the establishments we go to are ones that cops typically go to. And I mean, those ones that serve alcohol. But it's so funny that it's a weird psychology thing where they will not be expecting him to be with me and they don't even see him. Is that fucking weird? Happens all the time. Right. Yeah. And I'll have to like point at him, like, do you know who Kenny is? They're like, holy shit, the Red Ninja's here. I'm like, well, the 3 minutes you spent talking to me about how we've changed your life, he was standing literally right next to me and they never see him. It's the weirdest, because I think they just don't expect to see him.
He's very, very humble, kind of mild mannered guy. I mean, I could tell you, like, during the conference last year, I basically did the whole conference with Kenny. Like, he similar to me, had perfect attendance. He had a row we sat in. I sat next to him, like, you know, a few seats down. And we spent from the first class to the last class every day there, other than when we were actually presenting. And it's funny that during the breaks, he'll come up and grab him. And he just never looked for it. Do you know what I'm saying? He never got up. It was like, all right, ladies and gentlemen. Yep, you see it. It is the Red Ninja. Please come. Pour your praise upon me. He really didn't. He just sat there with a notebook like any other student. And you know what's funny? When the last speaker was done, and they're like, all right, guys, that's it. Well, I'll see you tomorrow. Got up, packed up his little thing, and he just went back, you know, with his life. You know what I mean? He's an impressive dude. Like I said, I'm generally impressed. Again, I'm the opposite in that I am private in that way, meaning I'm not, I'm too hyper. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have that. I cannot say a word. I just can't say one. You and I made that. We talked about drinking, and I mentioned I don't drink. You know, and it's, people think that it's like some sort of a philosophy I operate. You know, like, I'll go to these hosting agencies. They'll say, "Hey, you know, come up with a thing. Come on, we'll grab a beer." And I'm like, "No, I don't drink." They're like, "Oh, all right." You know, dot dot dot. See you in class. You know, but the reason I say the story though is is me telling people that I don't drink. They're baffled by it. I don't do small well. I cannot drink. I cannot drink for. I go 6 months until I'm in an environment where I'm like, oh, I'll have a drink tonight, you know? But again, what I can't do is have one. You know what I mean? So I can say no, I'm very bad at stop, you know? So it's kind of the same thing like in crowds.
Dude, it's very funny how, you know, when people express these things about themselves, you're like, oh, wow. There's probably a good reason why all of us are so connected on the level that we are. I don't think it's just the street cop platform. I think a lot of us are cut from the same cloth with the same genetics and the same personalities.
Yeah.
I mean, the common denominator, people have asked me like, what, you know, what makes your organization? So what do these guys all typically possess that makes them so good at what they do? And as you're talking, I'm thinking to myself, imagine if you grew up in a different environment where, just like me, you may have been groomed. I don't know, let's call it an upper middle class or upper class family, where you were being groomed to move on to, you know, who knows, Ivy League, and then into the Fortune 500 world. I look at you guys and say, I'm thankful that you do what you do and you are who you are, because we need those people. But I wonder what you could have been and how successful financially, or what you could have done differently in a different part of the world. And the point is I believe that the common denominator amongst the instructors that work with this organization, I'll excuse myself from this because I don't think I'm that smart. I may be a little funny and have some good, but it's intelligence, dude. Yeah. The IQ of all these men and women associated with this organization is, I mean, they are, I look at them and just like, these motherfuckers are so smart. They can put shit together so quickly, right? You just guys are so goddamn smart. So it's so impressive to watch.
I think you're right. We've talked about that. So I was even saying, like, even like some of it's an emotional intelligence, some of it's another, you know, I started doing the podcast myself, obviously, like listening to some of the others, you know, it's interesting. Like, you know, like I just, Heather God, I'm going to screw up her name.
Glogolich.
Heather, it actually helped out. I actually needed something real quick in New Jersey. I shot out a text to the kind of the street cop sort of family. It was like, hey, anybody know this? And I got a quick response from Rob Ferrero, fast response from Eric Baum, and a fast response from Heather. And Eric actually, it worked out really good because Eric actually got me in touch with the guy right away. And then Heather actually made a phone call directly for him. He was like, yeah, I'll get a hold of that right now. So anyway, but long story short, I then just felt like a loyalty because I've heard something that was saying, like, oh, I gotta listen to her something or podcast or watch some videos just to you know, support, you know, like some shit, you know, that's what you do. Apparently that's the world we live in. You know, just
little tiny, express little your likes at your fingertips.
Yes, exactly. Little silhouetted thumbs is how we share appreciation. Right. So, but anyway, it was interesting though. Cause like I listened to her podcast. I never saw that podcast coming. Never saw it coming. Oh, her story and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? I just didn't know what it was about. To me, it was just, you know, the full female officer and all the stuff. I just thought it was going to be, you know, I didn't know what it was going to be, I guess. So it was interesting. As she talked about it and she got her story, she was saying like, yeah, there's a benefit to guys taking this too. I'm thinking she's fucking dead on. You know, it's not a thing that I would have personally thought to sign up for as the full female officer, you know, but now hearing it, I'm kind of like, yeah, fuck yeah. I'm at a conference. She talks from somewhere. She's there. Like, yeah, it's interesting. You know? So it's just funny. That she has a different kind of angle of this. So when I say intelligence, like in hers, it's an emotional and a psychological intelligence. You know what I mean? It's a survivor's intelligence of something really horrific, you know? So it was interesting. But yeah, I found the podcast very eye-opening.
What's the difference between Tommy Brooks now and Tommy Brooks when you first started? What do you think has evolved a lot for you at this?
Bob or?
Yeah, I'm saying it's Tommy Brooks, rookie cop, maybe even year or two into Tommy Brooks now, seasoned vet. Just what, and you don't have to go into like what your actual practical skills are. Just as you become an older man, like how are you seeing things differently now versus then?
Oh, I'm sure there's a lot. I made the same dumb mistakes everybody made. You know what I mean? I got tunnel vision, both visually and behaviorally. Like, I've told the story before, so I'm not ashamed of it, but, I was brand new and I was on one of the first times I was driving a cop by myself. And one of my training officers always said, like, you know, you're on a plane, it comes back suspended or revoked. You know, you get the whole car, you have free search on the car, you know, due to the fact you can tow it and blah, blah, blah. And I remember that just stuck in my head. I wasn't thinking of the legality of how it all worked. It was just a quick reference. And so I ran plates and I just waited for a car to come back suspended or revoked. To such a point, I remember I ran a car one day and it came back stolen. This is a true story. This is how in my own head I got. It came back stolen. And I was trying to think, I'm like, well, maybe this is the owner's car and they've gotten it back by now. So I was still looking for the status of the car and it was active. And because the car was active, yet reported stolen, I was playing so many games in my head that I was like, I don't think I can stop this thing. Like, I don't stop on this. This could be the owner and it's active. Like that was like my first week of police work. That's the level of stupid I was. I did a speech one time, probably about 10 years being a cop. I do an academy class. I get invited as a guest speaker a lot. And I was talking about, you know, when you first get on the job, you have this vision of yourself that you are going to do. My first night, I'm going to get a gun. I'm just gonna be like that. They're just one of those famous cops they always talk about. Oh, this guy from the day he got here, just one of the greats. You know, it's Tony C. You know, home run in his first at bat in, you know, Major League Baseball. And it's funny, you have this whole thing. I'm gonna catch bad guys. I'm gonna do this. But then I remember my first day at the job. I didn't know anyone at that police job. I never met a cop before I got hired. So when I actually graduated the academy, and I went to the first day of work. It was actually only my second time ever even being in the building. And my dream of being the greatest cop of all time was thwarted when I was literally in the building for 4 hours and I realized I didn't even know where the bathroom was. I remember joking with somebody being like, I was dreaming of being like the cop that people will be talking about generations from now. And I didn't even know where the fucking bathroom was. I didn't even know where they kept the pens. Like what, if I need an eraser, where does somebody get one of those? So point is I was as naive as everybody coming on. I did have some lucky early moments combined with intentional luck, meaning working hard until things got lucky. I hooked up with some really good cops, particularly at the time, 5 guys and 1 girl from the anti-crime unit of the first PD that I was on. I learned a lot watching from them. So I was in it. I was always a compiler. I'm a note taker. I told you I'm a nerd. You know, I'm very open about it. You know, I'm a very nerdy guy. I'm a thinker, I'm an overthinker often. And so anyway, compiled things. I went to Boston, kind of it. Just already had some experience, had some plain clothes, had some undercover work and stuff under my belt. So I was able to hit the ground with really fresh eyes. And it's actually, you know what's interesting too, Dennis? It's interesting to do something the second time when you've already done it, because you catch the nuance, you know, like the first time you watch, I'll use a generic example, you watch Game of Thrones, you know, you're in season 4, and they mention some character or something, right? Or they introduce some new character. You can't appreciate that in season 1, someone mentioned him in a passing conversation. They said, oh, that's like arguing with the mount on the ride. It seems like a random, you know, statement. But then 2 seasons later, it's a character, you know? So when you go rewatch it, you catch those lines. It's in, again, whereas it would be impossible to catch the first time because you couldn't predict what would happen. But that said, it's like that, I think, with my career, with the training and with all that kinds of stuff, where I think that I was just always kind of taking notes, kind of taking lessons. And when I went back to the police academy, when I changed jobs, because I had to do it here, they didn't do laterals. You had to restart everything.
Wow.
To sit through all the law classes, having not only already had these classes, but then worked them for 4 years. So now they had to come, you could really catch some nuance and go, that's funny. I thought I understood that. But these 3 case laws here are actually kind of steered here. And so I think that really, I don't know. I know we do like legal updates here, but you never quite get the law like you do when you're, you know, your 50-hour con law block in the academy and 50 of criminal law or whatever they're doing now, you know? So that was cool. That was cool. I thought to go back to the academy. A lot of people complained about it. I thought it was tit. I thought it was nothing. But that was it. So then I think that from there, once again, I was in a position to just take notes and watch more people and, you know, watch cops in my district that were better than me and see what they were doing and hope that they liked me enough to share other hallway conversations, you know, and then try some of that.
You're iterating a point that I typically say to people, because I'll get asked, how do I become better? How do I get better? And the response is, one, I think that people should train more because there's nothing better than it. It's any profession. I mean, I'm trying to get better at business. I listen to business podcasts. I listen to business audiobooks. I read articles. And, you know, you said something that I say, the second piece of advice I give is go and work and observe with people who are actually good at what you want to do. And correct. I call it the first row seat at the 50-yard line. What better place to learn how football works than sitting at the first row, 50-yard line, and learning the game there? You're watching it in the front seat. One thing I had before we go, because I do have to go in a minute. You talked about overthinking, and you seem to start moving towards that. Do you think overthinking sometimes is a detriment to you a little bit?
I do. If you're in a test-taking environment, overthinking has never helped anybody, you know. Your natural instincts are usually right. Your brain's doing a lot of the work for you. You often know the answers to stuff before you even realize you do. And we talk ourselves out of things and stuff like that. So no, I think overthinking can be an issue for people. And I had that phase in my career too, where I certain things I really should have done, I should have tried, or should not have done, or not have tried, because I spun it too much and I sold myself on an answer that even then it was not confident. I find that just, like you said, just kind of putting your blocks together and kind of creating the person you are, and then just moving with a professionalism and a confidence and a grace. I do want to chime on, at least we're going to go, but drive home your point when you said that a lot of us are actually very similar. You're saying, you know, we're not just on the street cop umbrella, but you're like, it's funny that in so many ways we're all very alike. So it's funny that you give a piece of advice to someone when you say, first you're out with the 50-yard line. So the very advice you gave there, I get asked the same question as well. Again, local trainer, you know, here. But it's funny, I have an entirely different example, but the same answer. So I always say, I said, it's like, do you know who Voltron is? And I know I'm completely dating myself and I'm fine with it. It's part of the joke. Younger people would say Power Rangers or something, right? But it was this robot that had 5 different robots. They would all come join together and one had a head popped up and then it was a giant robot. 5 robots made 1 robot. So I used to say to people, I said, it's like building a Voltron. If I watch that cop was really, really good at that part of the job, that's the only thing I need to steal from him. I don't need to be like him. I don't need to be anything like him. But I can do how he does that. This cop here, she's just one of the best I've ever seen when it comes to responsibility of doing this. And I don't need to be anything like her. I don't need to be her best friend. I can just do that. And I say that it's like building a Voltron. You have to take a little bit from each thing until I can realize that I'm good at this. And here's the key. Because if everyone's going to build a Voltron, and the fact is everyone would be exactly alike, and that's also no good. Because everyone obviously chooses the best of the best, right? So here's kind of the thing that I qualify with. really not the best example I could ever come up with, but I've just stuck with it because I said it the first time. And so it jumps into my head. And honestly, other than this podcast, I haven't never think time to think of a better one. The example I use, I say Tom Cruise and Robert De Niro, right? Both considered good actors, long time actors, right? But the key is they're both very different. They're really, really different. Like Tom Cruise would have looked like a fool trying to play some of the roles that De Niro played in like some of the mob movies, for example. He could not have done it. Doesn't matter if someone's even a better actor, if you think, or whatever. He can't, it's not doable. De Niro could not play some of the roles that Tom Cruise had. He couldn't have pulled off Risky Business. You know what I mean? He could have done it. He wouldn't have been as cool in Top Gun. You know what I mean? So my point is you don't just build a Voltron, but you have to cater it to who you really are. Like, you have to actually know yourself. You have to play the role that you really are made for. Like, if you're a nice person, don't build your Voltron out of someone who's a dick, because you're not going to pull it off. You know, if some guy has a swagger to the way he talks and some of the young people kind of, hey, they roll them. Don't take that if you don't pull it off very naturally yourself, you know? And so it's funny that when we talk about these things, like, it's all the same stuff, but just packaged differently. So it's funny when you say, sit there at that front row, 50 yard line, best seat in the house, and watch what people are doing. It's funny. It's just, it's the same comment. It's that, you know, and then use that to help build your best self. It's funny. It's the same comment, just packaged differently. It's interesting.
Well, it has been wonderful again. And I think we should do this more often. And maybe next time we'll bring Kenneth into here, and I'll just moderate and let you two go into the similarities between a red ninja and a guy who will never know what color your hair actually was at some point in your life.
Once. I'll show the photos.
Dude, can you do me a favor and share some photos of when you had hair? Send them down. I want to take a look. I want to see the young Tommy Brooks.
Well, you know, I was in a band. I had hair on my shoulders. Kurt Cobain. Yeah.
We not only need that for my personal knowledge of what you look like, but I need it for the future, for when you're having a next large birthday party, so I could do a lot of fun shit with it.
It's funny because you know what my thing was? I was saying that I don't mind doing the podcast with you at all. I've gotten more comfortable. As you know, it took you a while, not you, but I couldn't get talked into it at first. I just felt very exposed. I don't know. And now I'm very comfortable with it. It's fine. But it is funny. I still don't like the video. Like, I want to be the audio podcast guy. I do this. I would do a radio show with you every morning, 7 days a week. We could talk about me. We could talk about price of eel. It doesn't make a difference. I'd be fine with it. But yeah, even while I'm talking, I'm looking at the picture of my face. And I'm just like, why do I keep putting myself in this position?
All right, I got to go. I got to go do something.
Love you, buddy. Be safe out there.
Love you too, man. I'll see you. Hey guys, don't forget to check out the Street Cop Training Conference 2023, April 23rd through the 28th, Nashville, Tennessee, the Gaylord at Opry. What a center, what a place. We have amazing speakers, amazing training, 5 of the most impactful days of your career. Check it out at streetcop.com. You do not want to miss out. There is a room code available for a discounted room. Sign up now at streetcop.com.